It's Thursday the 19th of January. Welcome to episode 103 of Digital Outbox. Hello again. Joining me tonight is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hello there.
Hi. And Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Good evening to you all.
It is a good evening.
Good evening.
Indeed. It's a good evening to be indoors.
And the one reason why I shouldn't host is every time I do it, I think of David Frost. And I just get sucked into going, hello, good evening.
except he's good at hosting.
Ouch.
Exactly.
Ouch. Throw that dagger.
So, let's move on to this week's news. First up is SOPA protests. Henry, can you take us through? No, so, SOPA protests this week, we've seen the internet go black. Chris, why don't you take us through what has been happening this week and what is SOPA?
So SOPA is Stop Online Privacy Act. So this is an act that's winding its way through the US government at the moment. They're trying to get it through all their legal stuff. but basically, it's they're trying to stop websites from distributing copyrighted content. And they are doing this in certain ways. This only relates to foreign websites, because websites within the US apparently can come under their existing laws, but they're trying to make it so they can order a DNS record to be removed so that if they find that the site's hosting copyrighted content, they can change the DNS record so that people in the US can no longer access that site. They're trying to get search engines to remove to stop listing any sites that host any copyrighted content. And they're also trying to get payment providers to stop accepting payments for websites that have also hosted copyrighted content. Now, I'm sure that all sounds very good to someone who's has copyrighted content as being pirated. But the way they're trying to achieve this is it's a bit of a sledgehammer, and actually could fundamentally change the way the internet works. Effectively, there's no due process on this, so it's only an alleged copyright infringement that can bring down these sites. Now, the whole point is everyone sort of is saying, well, this potentially has really wide and wide-reaching censorship issues. And there's other people saying, well, the copyright holders are saying, well, no, we need this kind of legislation so that we can have the power to be able to control it. So there's a whole lot of fuss kicked off over in the US about this, rightly so. And Wikipedia and a number of other sites decided that in protest they would bring down their services or inconvenience users in some other way to make their point. And it appears like they have made their point, because a lot of the backers of the bill and people pushing the bill through are step away from the bill. They're trying to disassociate themselves now because they can see that there is actually quite a lot of negative feelings towards it.
I mean, it really was a bonkers way of going about trying to protect copyright. I mean, let's just, you know, kill everybody, really. I mean, all the websites. Seems completely, completely bonkers. I mean, the thing that impressed me was, though, that actually this was making the national news headlines in the UK last night, which, you know, for a little known piece of US legislation, I think is quite impressive. And really, of course, the reason it was doing that was because pupils couldn't get hold of Wikipedia cheat on their homework.
People's journalists.
I had a key report to submit yesterday, and it was factless. I think the most impressive thing for me was just how many of the big internet companies not only went black, but also put up a lot of information and also encouraged people in America to contact the senators and actually do something. You know, rather than just hide it away or say, yeah, we're in their PR blinks, you know, talk about it. They actually made quite a big show. And it's a scary bill. I mean, it was basically, I mean, if somebody put a torrent link in Digital Outbox, you know, it was as scary as that, that you're now responsible for everybody commenting on your site. So forum owners and, you know, blog owners, it's just an unmanageable.
There's no comeback built in. In fact, there's protection built in for the IP owners. If they make a complaint over a website and it brings a website down for what could go on for a year, let's say, there's no compensation should there be anything found to be in favour of the person who was alleged to have been infringing copyright. So serious things. I mean, people make make serious livings off of the internet, and the ability for a copyright owner to, you know, make an allegation and have all their content, you know, that site removed from the internet effectively, it is a massive, massive step. So who's moved this so far up the agenda above anything like spam, illegal activities online, you know, scamming, identity fraud,
the economy,
fraud in general,
health,
the
education.
So what has brought this up the agenda? Well, what's brought it up is lobbying and cockloads of money.
Lobbying and old industry still struggling with this and I was going to say this new industry we're in. It's not new, you know, they're still trying to fight a battle from 10 years ago.
No, but I think what it does show as well is that the tech industry is really not that engaged with the legislator, certainly not in this country and certainly not in the States. And until the tech companies actually really start also really properly lobbying their representatives and coming up with some reasonable solutions.
Interesting, there was a company, I can't remember the blooming names of these things, the company pulled out of E3, games company, because the E3 organisers sort of signed up to the build and supported it. And they decided they'd take their $50,000 with the view to setting up a lobbying group that will in future make sure that government are lobbied over these issues.
Red 5?
Sounds familiar.
Well, the Friends. Quick Google says it was Red 5, yeah.
There you go.
Cool. And steering a similar topic to do with US laws and copyright, a piracy student has lost his US extradition battle over copyright infringement. So this is a 23-year-old UK student who had been, fighting for the last, I think it was last 18 months, trying to avoid extradition. And a UK judge has decided that he should be extradited and face trial in America, even though he's not breaking any UK laws. So this is, for me, this is an amazing judgment, you know, that the fact that somebody, you know, breaking a law in America can get basically extradited, and especially when it's not illegal here.
I was going to say, this is a website. He created a website and he linked to TV shows that were, again, not distributed by the TV channels and therefore effectively pirated. So this was a while back. This is not recent. And literally his website that he had just linked to other content on other people's websites. And as people have said, he's probably not breaking any UK laws, but America using their power to bring this guy over to America to face trial.
Well, I don't think it's actually American power. This is the UK government's incompetence by deciding unilaterally to implement an extradition treaty with the US, knowing that there was absolutely no way that the US were going to put something similar, a reciprocal arrangement in place. So, I mean, you've got Gary McKinnon, the autistic hacker who's seriously unwell and lost his trial to go over, to be extradited over there, as well as the guys from NatWest, the three senior bankers.
Oh, actually, I forgot about
who
them.
Were yep. They were, that was part of the Enron scandal, and they were here in the UK, and they've been extradited, and it's all under this one law, really, this treaty which the UK decided to implement. So I know that that's something that the UK government are having another look at, and I think they have to, because there's just until there's a reciprocal arrangement and we can start hauling Americans over here, then it really is very, very one-sided, and we're going to get a lot more of these of these cases where, you know, UK citizens are extradited to the US for non crimes, that, you know, things that aren't crimes at all in the UK.
And the problem for me is that I fear this, that the usual with UK law, once the first judgment has been placed, it's almost like there's a, you know, they just refer to that back in court now and they say, well, found guilty for that. This is the same example. Let's get that guy, that guy, that guy.
Well, that's how the legal system works. Case law. You know?
I know, but it's I don't know. It's just it's so, I don't know. It's just such a controversial thing to do. You know, the fact that UK law would not have prosecuted him, but a judge in the UK decides, well, because it's fails American law, you're going over there.
I heard someone talking about the sniff test, and this fails on the sniff test because it stinks.
It definitely does.
I was wondering where you were going with that. I was like, sniff test? Definitely does. What's that all about? Something else which would probably fail the sniff test is Google. Now, Google is usually well known for its righteousness, its do no evil motto. And as I've said before on here, it's like any big business. Some things go wrong from time to time. There's a blog post from a firm in Kenya, a firm called Mocality. And they were, it looks like they were a local listings ad, and they were trying to get local businesses to sign up. And they noticed some strange events with some of their customers. So they set up a sting, and lo and behold, they found out that Google was basically acting for them and trying to sign up their customers on their behalf and saying they were in partnership. And once they'd kind of found this out, it didn't just happen in Kenya, but it then moved over to India, and some known Google addresses in India did the same. And I guess what's quite surprising is that Apple is well known for its fanboy community. But the amount of people that posted on this blog post saying, you have no evidence, what a load of rubbish, and this could easily be spoofed. And then Google eventually put up their comment of, we were mortified to learn that a team of people working on a Google project improperly used Mocality's data and misrepresented our relationship with Mocality to encourage customers to create a new website. And they've apologised unreservedly, and they're still investigating. I'm sure we'll get an update at some point once they've done a full and thorough investigation. A horrible, horrible story.
And when Mocality first got alerted to this, when they getting questions about having, you know, what about their websites? And Mocality have never given websites, so they kind of did a bit of investigating and found, they eventually dug down to the thing. So it seems like there were some, I'm sure, what will be termed rogue agents or something along those lines.
It's already being termed as contractors. They're already distancing themselves and saying it's a firm that were contracted to Google.
Sign of a probably not anymore. Extremely,
no.
Extremely large very quickly, Google. So whether they're just losing control of the fringes, which is what it sounds like, to be honest.
Yeah, and there was another example came quickly afterwards from OpenStreetMap. They had caught some Google known IPs vandalizing OpenStreetMap, and I actually tried OpenStreetMap over Christmas, and I couldn't believe how good it had got.
So is OpenStreetMap, you take photos yourself of streets and post them up? How does it work?
It's all powered by human edit. And if you go and even just look at your area and see how many edits are taking place, it's amazing. It's a bit like Wikipedia. I'd seen Wikipedia years ago, and the first time I looked at one of the kind of edit wars on Wikipedia and realised how many people are updating Wikipedia. And obviously, that's, when you think about it, it's an immense resource, so there must be lots of people. But OpenStreetMap's much the same. You know, just in my little area in Glasgow, over a 2-week period, there'd been like hundreds of edits, spelling corrections, and
but
the actual fidelity of the maps were really good. And the reason I'd visited it was a couple of prominent web firms have moved from using Google because they've brought in charging for Google Maps. You know, so for all their use of the API, And this was, I guess that was another one of the things that they've been saying recently. Google is getting more evil. They're more acting big business because they've got everybody hooked in and sucked in. You know, they've put out that free dangle of go and come and use our data. It's free and it's great. And then, you know, 5 years later, now you're using it loads, I'm going to charge
it. Yeah. And,
it, and I, let's put I
it,
don't
it,
see
it is loads. It is loads. So you have to
it
be
is
heavy
loads. User. But for many websites that are, you know, free at the moment, it is like I've no choice but to shut down or go elsewhere. And OpenStreetMap's actually a really good alternative. The quality was very impressive. But they put up a blog post saying that they'd caught Google contractors actually making edits on many places around the world, you know, turning streets into one way and on all that kind of stuff, and really just, you know, just ruining the experience. And Google says, yes, we know who's done it. It was a couple of contractors. Again, we've sacked them, but it was only 20 changes. It wasn't thousands.
Yeah, so I guess whether that story is going to evolve a bit, but 20 changes around the world doesn't sound that big. But it's, you know, it shows how a reputation can be damaged by a couple of individuals.
All big businesses have difficulties with certain elements. How do you control, you know, 100,000 people? They're not all going to follow the toe of the line. It's how you deal with it afterwards, I think. Some other news stories that caught our eye this week. Jerry Yang's finally quit Yahoo. So the co-founder of Yahoo, who has been in charge and wasn't in charge and went back to being in charge and saw his stock price tumble, has finally resigned. He wants no more to do with it. And I guess the most damning kind of judgment is that when he announced his resignation, the stock price went up. So nice to see you, Jerry. One that caught my eye, a Yahoo company that's been in the doldrums recently and it's got a lot of prominent photographers and photographers leaving it, is Flickr. Lots of engineering talent has left it as well. And they've announced, they've started off 2012 by removing some features. But this is really to clear the decks and actually free up and get Flickr back on track. So they say they've got some big new features coming up this year, and they're also signing engineers again.
So
I've got high hopes.
Do you think these will be the same features that they've just removed, so they can announce them as a big new thing? Like that whole kind of, you know, when you see something on sale, it must have been on sale at a higher price for 28 days somewhere, you know, yeah. Somewhere
you mean
in the UK.
The permanent. I'd love to find out the DFS store that is just full price. You know, they don't have a sale on, it's just everything's full price. We're not breaking the law. You know, go to, I don't know.
No, I've been there. It's in Fraserburgh.
Is
yeah,
it?
In the northeast of Scotland. They don't sell anything, but it's piled to the roof with stock.
Well, speaking of companies that don't sell anything, Kodak's just filed for bankruptcy as well. So dear old Kodak, I guess as I was growing up, that was the only real name for photography and for cameras. And it's filed for bankruptcy in a bid to survive.
Well,
for film, yes. But it's in a bid to survive a liquidity crisis. So here's hoping they can come out the other side of that. It'd be a shame to lose a name like Kodak. I'm sure you all agree. Facebook. We've got some great Facebook stories. A lie. We've got a couple of Facebook stories. Would you like to listen to music with friends?
Not generally while I'm sat at my computer.
Oh. Would you, Henry?
But I can.
Well, maybe. It depends who the friends were, and it depends what the music is.
Well, this is a rip-roaring new feature. Facebook have launched music services and a new thing called Listen with Friends. So if you see...
Mother.
Well, it depends. Your mother might have great taste in music.
No, she doesn't.
Okay. But basically, you can see that one of your friends is listening to a track and you can listen together in a group. And as that person changes tracks, you get to hear what he's listening to next. Social DJing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just me. I don't have like hundreds and hundreds of friends on Facebook, so the chances of that ever being used for me is virtually zero.
I don't know that I like the same kind of music that they do either.
That's the whole point. You listen to something new.
Right. Okay. I've clearly lost the plot, really.
If you think you've lost the plot, wait till you hear about this. Months ago, we talked about Facebook's open graph. and it's apps that were coming. And we talked about Spotify. And Spotify's brought in apps, but when Spotify appeared in Facebook, it didn't really change Facebook for me. I didn't see much difference. Did you guys?
No.
No. Ideal. Facebook apps have officially launched last night. 60 open graph websites and apps are either launching or about to launch. And with it, I just think we're going to get spammed to hell on Facebook now.
So these are activities you're doing on other sites, so whether that be listening to music on another website or just carrying out an action of anything really now. That's the whole point of Open Graph, is it could be anything, buying tickets, planning holidays, anything like that. And those sites can now directly post as you, effectively saying, oh, Chris is doing such and such.
Yep. Yeah.
Even... it seems when I don't necessarily want them to all know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, the thing is that you these apps, they only ask for whether you want them to do this. They only ask once, and then they take that as a carte blanche to do anything they
go,
like.
Go, go, go!
So it's like, yeah, that's a bit worrying. On the other hand, I mean, these things, am I right? These things don't appear on like your... on your wall. They appear just in the timeline, so that they have kind of separated out a lot of these things now. So from the
so
that is quite a good thing. I just wish they could just take them away altogether. But hey,
but I do object to something like the Guardian. When I click on an article, it actually publishes up that I've read it.
Yeah, and I've noticed that.
I've not read it. I've just started looking at it, and I'm not going to do it anymore because I've read the first two lines. It's like, oh, I'm not interested.
Well, I've noticed that, and the Guardian, the Independent do that. A couple of others do it as well, and you kind of think, well, do I have to be careful of what I read now as well?
Yes,
you know, yeah. I know that
maybe that's quite a good
pretty
thing.
Cynical, but yeah, well, maybe. But there's nothing to say these services are going to post what you are doing anyway. I assume there are guidelines. Let's call them guidelines they can put up there. But effectively, they could end up saying whatever they like about you.
And it's like what you said at the start that once you've signed up, it just happens automatically. And it's just the fact that see if the Guardian took a minute, see if it was an article and it says you've been on this page for a minute. I'm now going to show that you've read it, because chances are you have. I'd be more comfortable with that. It's the fact it's almost instantaneous that, well, hey, it's the same with Spotify. I think it's as soon as you start playing something, it's up there. Alongside the apps, we're also getting new verbs. So we're going to have things like, you know, listened to and read and watched and knitted and bought.
Yeah, these aren't really new verbs. They've been around in the English language for quite some time,
I missed a new Facebook verb. Up until now, nobody's ever said the word knitted on Facebook. This is going to be brand new, and people are actually going to be knitting. And I'm a bit scared.
Like.
I just have the fear that this is going to bring a whole of this new... And when I say spam, it's touching Henry's point. It's not just spam from seeing what everybody else is doing and having this almost like all this noise on my timeline.
Voyeurism.
Yeah, but also imagine a spammer getting all that information about you, that you and your friends have been doing all these different interactions and reading all these things. It's just too much.
At the end of the day, if Facebook's idea is that you know it is you online, well, they're going down the right route, basically, aren't they? Because that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
yeah, and probably most people under 25 probably think this is a great idea, which is probably why they're doing it.
Oh, I forgot we're old. That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Mind you, that's always an excuse for getting through things that really are a bit, over the line.
Yeah.
Like, the young people like it.
Alex Salmond trying to reduce the age of voting for a Scottish referendum. But we'll not talk about politics.
You've let me down. You've mentioned that cock on the podcast. He annoys me. Anyway. We had a big announcement today.
Salmon.
Don't. We had a big announcement today from Apple. The Apple Education event took place. And I think I think our key expert in the room is probably Henry, and he has children. And this is primarily aimed at textbooks and aimed at the education market. But it's only just happened. So I'll read through the changes very briefly, and we can take a quick straw poll on what we think. First up was a brand new iBooks 2 for iPad. And that's featuring iBooks textbooks. So these are the new textbooks announced today, which are a lot more interactive. And I remember we talked about, Push Pop Press? They were the folk that did,
Yeah.
Algora app, and it was snapped up by Facebook. These textbooks that Apple are now producing are very similar to that, very interactive. You can drag out photos and videos, and you get timelines and animations, and it all looks quite nice. And that's now free and available today. The textbooks that come along with it, and I guess this is a bit that's quite American. I think textbooks, when it comes to colleges, are very expensive. You know, there seems to be a lot of posts today. People talk about $100 and $150 for a textbook. Now, what Apple is trying to do is say, well, actually, most are going to be $15 or less. And they've also announced some partners, so McGraw-Hill and Pearson. But they've also brought out iBooks Author. So this is a free app available for Mac that you can download and create your own books and publish.
Yeah, that's free for anyone.
Free for anyone. And it's almost like using Keynote or Pages. So that kind of app. And it looks like you can very easily, using some templates, put together a fairly nice book. So that's iBooks Author. iTunes U also came. Now, iTunes U has been available from iTunes up until now. But iTunes U is now a separate iPad app. And it makes available all the university education content, which is actually now massive. I don't know if any of you guys have used it, but it's the amount of content on there is scary.
It is absolutely phenomenal, and it's not, I mean, it's really good quality stuff. It's
absolutely,
you know, Stanford and you know, really top schools, as they call them, in the
iOS,
States, universities.
The iOS development tools on there from, I think it was from Stanford. The lectures are excellent. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So that, I mean, there's a couple of stats around that. There's what they're talking about is there's a massive amount of education apps, but if you just look at iTunes University content on its own, there's over 500,000 lectures, videos, and books available, and it's in a whole range of material. It's not just computing. It's you know, there's a whole load of businesses in there. There's a whole load of, you know, different genres in there. So it's some big announcements today.
It's such they're so canny. It's clever. because effectively, I mean, I watched their kind of demo reel, if you like, their kind of video that they always put together after these keynotes, and effectively I barfed up, you know. I had to swallow a bit of sick down, because the world that they try and portray is just so pukesome.
No, it's,
you
know, perfect.
All these kids,
it's
using
a perfect world.
It is a perfect world. Everyone has an iPad. Everyone, without knowing it, then is locked into everything that Apple do, and so they're trying to project this world where really, you know, they're trying to, you know, their way is the only way, and it does annoy me, because for example, you know, anything made in, you know, the authoring program has to be sold via Apple, so all that money has to be channeled through
or given away for free.
Or given away, so you can give it away for free, but I imagine that you can't use that format on anything other than iOS devices anyway.
Well, interestingly.
So it's one of those things, that they're so canny in that they've captured the market. I mean, it's very clever, it's a great vision, and I'm sure it'll encapsulate a lot of interest, and I imagine that from this video, teachers all over the place are going to go and buy iPads for their students.
The whole purpose of this really is to get into Amazon's space, really. At the moment, Amazon's where you go for books and things, and starting with education books and things, you're getting people used to, you know, they're really hoping to try and get the whole kind of electronic publishing of books, and starting with education is a brilliant ploy, you know. There's
it's such a clever ploy. It's so clever.
It's very clever, but it is really just a start. But it really is the only way for them to really move on Amazon, because the iBook store really hasn't taken off. It hasn't done what they'd hoped it would do, which is kind of disrupt Amazon's business at all. You know, really, there's nothing really like the Kindle. That's really got the same traction at all. So so it'll be interesting to see how this takes off. you know, some folks are already, of course, using iPad in education, and maybe find that the thought of textbooks is actually kind of going backwards in a way, when you know, there's so much that's available if you've got an iPad anyway. Maybe that's why making the cost of the textbooks reasonable is something else.
I don't disagree with any of that. I think it's a very clever idea, and having a textbook that auto updates, you know, corrects itself, costs a lot less and offers more, is a good idea. I guess what bugs me a little bit is that they're not talking about it being on any, you know, device. It has to be an Apple device, and I can see that, and it's very clever.
And I don't think there's any big surprise if you look at all the other things that Apple have done. You know, even if you look at things like, you know, your development tools, we'll give away the development tools for free. We'll give away the iBook format for free. We'll make it fairly easy to use. No doubt it'll be frustrating. It won't be as flexible as you want it to be, but it's a very easy step to take some content you've got and publish it and make it available. I've downloaded everything before we jumped on. A couple of things that were worth noting. One of the books was massive. It was 3 gig. You know, so if you've got a 16 gig iPad, it's not going to take a lot to fill that up, you know, with some music, video, and then you put in a couple of textbooks and a few apps.
Oh, you mean they're going to have to buy the 32 or 64 gig versions for all their pupils? Oh, what a shame.
And I guess this is a criticism that I could put quite a lot of these interactive books. It's like Windows 95 and Encarta's come out, and I've put in a CD-ROM drive and I've stuck it in and I've got this video playing and I've got another page and you know, a bit of Shakespeare's read out to me, and there's a DNA animation, and it felt very much, there's a free demo book on the iBook store that you can download, and it was just like that.
But come on, we loved Encarta 95. I know, but the option was just
there's going to be a whole load of these things, aren't you? You're like, I'm glad you're not charging for that, because there's no way anyone's going to pay for it.
Something that was really good, away from that, you can take some notes. You can't take notes in other books, but you can take notes in these textbooks. And when you take the note, you can switch to another view that pulls it all together, and then you can switch to another view that views it as like note cards. So you can almost have like question and answer. So as you're going through a book and studying, there has been a little bit of thought about how we can make this an actual good study tool. But
whether it actually is a good study tool is, I guess, yet analysis needs to be made on that, doesn't it?
And that's a bit of grounding. There's only 8 books in this new format available in the store today. Whether that changes by tomorrow, there's 800, but today there's 8. So not a lot of content for a big announcement. And it also looked like it's the iBook format. It's just a wrapped EPUB, which is a bit disappointing. Overall, but I was quite impressed, especially the iTunes U app. So I think that's going to show that content to a massive audience, because it's kind of hidden away within iTunes, really.
Yeah.
I can't remember where. I had a pick not too long ago, which was a similar open
service
online. Because, I can't remember what I can't remember what it's called now.
I will find
but
it.
Again, same thing.
I will find it.
MIT, Stanford lectures, all at university level.
Yeah, is it open courseware, or is it, or maybe part of that, isn't it? They're all open courseware now. There's a whole load of stuff that's available for that.
So there's other things doing similar ideas, and they're just available on the web. They're not even, you know, you don't have to be using iTunes or anything like that to get through that.
Never mind all this education guff. The world's first self-healing iPhone case.
Far more interesting.
And it's from Nissan. What the hell?
So this is paint they're apparently putting on their cars nowadays, which can detect when its molecular structures altered. So, for example, fine scratches or, you know, cracks or whatever. And it then, over a period of hours to up to a week, depending on how bad the scratch is, it can actually rearrange its structure again and effectively oozes into smoothness once more. I didn't even know they were doing it on their cars, so the fact they've now brought out a phone case is pretty amazing. Clever stuff.
Do you end up with no case left at all if you keep scratching it?
If you leave it too long, it just dribbles over your desk, probably. But yeah. How clever is that?
That sounds very clever.
So there's no price, and it's released later this year, but I still can't get my head around Nissan releasing an iPhone case. But in what is quite possibly the best news I have read this week, George Lucas is calling it quits.
Yay!
Or as Darth Vader would say, no!
No!
He was doing an interview for his new upcoming flick, Red Tails, and he says, I'm retiring. So he told the New York Times this. I'm retiring, he says, I'm moving away from the business, from the company, from all this kind of stuff. I hated when I seen I read that, I was like, you big cock. Well, reporters suggest a fifth Indiana Jones movie is in the pipeline, and it's like, stop. You know, that you ruined it with the fourth. Three was enough. Four was horrendous. Don't do a fifth.
The first one was great.
Indiana Jones for me will always be a trilogy. There was no fourth. It's like The Matrix wasn't a trilogy. There was only
one. It's dead to you.
The Matrix only had one film. Star Wars, there's only three. In my imaginary world, they're great. That's our news. Our picks this week is one. Henry, what's your pick?
Well, my pick was something I was using it last week on the podcast, and I'm using it again this week. It's the Blue Icicle. What's the Blue Icicle? It's very simply an XLR to USB converter, USB compliant device, so no drivers required. Just plug one end into the USB port on your Mac or PC. The other end, you connect in your XLR microphone, if you've got a microphone, and there's just a little volume control on it, and that's it. But it's brilliant if you've got any kind of reasonable, ordinary kind of microphone kicking about the house or your studio, and you want to get the audio directly into your computer. You just plug it in and go. So there are Shure, the famous microphone maker, make a higher fidelity one that just has a greater frequency response, but I've been pretty impressed with this. It's not too big. Doesn't take up too much space, and just works really, really well.
Price,
I think this was around £38 from Amazon. Retail price is about 50 or 60, I think.
Bargain.
There you go.
Thanks for that. That's, you sound really great, by the way. So obviously it works really well.
That was the thing. Now, one of the things here is people might be interested to know, does it work with the iPad and the USB camera connection kit? And I can say that it draws a bit too much power for that. So you need a powered USB hub. So it's getting a little bit impractical then, because you've got a powered USB hub,
a laptop,
the camera connection kit, your Blue Icicle, your microphone and everything.
All to remain portable.
All to remain portable. you're kind of losing the point a bit. So, I did record something on the iPad before the iPad told me that the device wasn't supported and it wasn't going to play ball anymore.
Cool. Thanks for that. And that's our picks. That's our podcast. Just a quick update, and that it's Academic Earth was Chris's pick from many moons ago.
That's right.
And the only reason I found that is we've updated our website, and I can finally search our show notes.
Ooh, look at you!
Look at us! And if you want to take a look,
you were searching. Actually, I was searching earlier, and it's very good.
We've got a new look of paint. Some of the bits are still a bit sticky. Some of the bits are not finished.
Hey, why not watch it dry?
Yeah, exactly. Well, watch paint dry while you listen to our podcast. That's the tagline.
Honestly, having show notes in line is great.
That's our tagline.
Big change.
Website is digitaloutbox.com. Email is at info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Henry, where can we find out more about you?
Talk Rhubarb on Twitter.
Chris?
Cheesy UK on Twitter.
And I am Streeper on Twitter and END.net on the old blogosphere. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again soon. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye-bye.